from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, January 12th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And of course, today is Hawaiian Shirt Friday. Let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. Yes, indeed. Truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven, the only way to start a weekend. Let's get things officially started on the blogcast with
the Daily Datagram.
Yep, words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I love this definition. Deja vu, the feeling you've been here before. Right. Deja mu, the feeling you've heard this bull before. Now let's move along to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history.
That's what I'm talking about.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happened on this day throughout history.
Oh, yeah.
Some cool, some not so cool.
I saw some.
Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See? You have been warned. Well, all right, kids, it was on this day in 1895. The National Trust was founded in the United Kingdom, and they've been trusted by the British people ever since, whether they deserve to be or not. And it was on this day in 2004, the world's largest ocean liner, the RMS Queen Mary II, made its maiden voyage. I guess you don't call it Queen Mary II. It would be, the ship would be known as the Queen Mary II. Okay, I stand corrected. Anyhow, the ship is so big, as soon as the stern of the ship leaves the British shore, the bow is already about a tenth of the way to its destination in New York.
Surely you can't be serious.
Interesting story hit the fan yesterday morning from Hertz Global Holdings, Inc. They said yesterday that they're selling about 20,000 electric vehicles from their fleet, or about one-third of the total, and they expect to book charges of about $245 million in the fourth quarter. Now, the move is aimed at better balancing their supply and expected demand for EVs, allowing the rental company to scrap a disproportionate number of lower-margin rentals and reduce damage expense associated with EVs. Yeah, they are more expensive to fix when they're damaged in, like, small collisions, fender benders, that sort of thing. Fender benders, bumper jumpers, chrome crackers. Now, collision and damage costs for EVs remained high in the fourth quarter. And this was made clear in Hertz regulatory filing. And the charges on top of the depreciation costs it expects to record in the quarter in the ordinary course of managing their fleet. Now, the news is the latest bad news on EVs. Remember, several years ago, on many of these same podcasts, I said EVs are not all they're cracked up to be. They're going to prove to be a very unpleasant Trojan horse. And then when I saw that the government was in the business of subsidizing the manufacture of EVs and, on the part of the customer, subsidizing the purchase of EVs, I knew the jig was up. It's a political move. EVs are political. They're certainly not practical. So, you got Ford Motor Company reporting lower than expected quarterly earnings, which included an adjusted loss of $1.3 billion for its EV unit. Turned out to be a lot wider than Wall Street expected. Ford said the customers interested in EVs were just downright unwilling to pay the vehicle's premium prices. And the company paused billions of long-term investment in EVs due to that disconnect. Now, Hertz is going to continue to offer EVs, but they're going to implement measures to boost profitability, including by expanding infrastructure such as charging stations. They're also going to try to grow their relationships with EV makers, particularly related to more affordable access to parts and labor. So far, it's turned out to be a bit of a nightmare for Hertz. So the filing read, quote, going forward, the company will continue to actively manage the total size of its EV fleet, as well as the allocation of EVs among customer segments, including leisure, corporate, government, and rideshare. So Hertz is going to reinvest in additional internal combustion engine vehicles, and they expect to improve adjusted, what they call EBITDA, or earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Okay. Try to remember that. You'll be quizzed later. And they hope to do that across 2024 as the vehicles are rotated. And in 2025, by which time, all in the plan have been sold. Now, you want to pick up an EV cheap, you can do that. You go to Hertz, buy from their fleet. I was looking at the prices, and the Tesla Model 3s are going for, you can get them as low as $14,000 with the tax credit. But you're probably going to be paying somewhere more in the neighborhood of about $17,700, just under $18,000, which isn't bad when you consider what they cost new. But again, these are rentals. They're fairly beat up. They have been used, very much used. You know, there are used cars and then there are very much used cars. These are very much used cars because when people grab the keys to a rental, the poor car doesn't get any respect, right? So the filing also said it's expected that this benefit to the company's financial results will be derived from higher revenue per day and lower depreciation and operating expenses related to its remaining fleet. Because they're talking about divesting themselves of about a third of their EV fleet. And then the company further anticipates that incremental free cash flow generation related to this action will approximate $250 million to $300 million in the aggregate over 2024 and 2025. Well, Hertz backed its revenue guidance for the fourth quarter of $2.1 billion to $2.2 billion and said its adjusted EBITDA is going to be negatively impacted by the EV sales plan. So they expect the adjusted EBITDA to be a loss of $120 million to $130 million. Now, their stock was slightly higher pre-market, but it's fallen 44% in the last 12 months, while the S&P 500 has gained 20.5%. EVs. Long on promise, very short on delivery. I feel like I've kind of opened Pandora's box here regarding EVs and the new line of thinking from our government, at least the government that we're stuck with right now, regarding emissions and climate change, all of that BS. And I stumbled across something that I think would help explain the realities that we're facing with a little help from the Fox Business Channel. David Asman, who's one of the key anchors over there, had an interesting conversation with Danish environmental economy author Bjørn Lomborg. Now, Bjørn is a Danish author, and he's the president of the think tank Copenhagen Consensus Center. And he's the former director of the Danish government's Environmental Assessment Institute in Copenhagen. And he became internationally known for his best-selling book, The Skeptical Environmentalist. What Bjorn is basically a fellow who's pretty well-versed on energy, climate issues, and economic issues, which few climatologists are, you know. You get these progressive climate, what I call yahoos, and they expect us all to switch over to electric cars under the supposed belief that, well, by going electric, we're not polluting the air as much, which, of course, is BS because you have to use fossil fuels to fire up the electric plants or nuclear energy, which in either case, the left is against. Right? The left doesn't want fossil fuels to feed electric plants and they don't want nuclear energy. They want everything solar or wind generated. Which, of course, is BS. You cannot power this planet, not with the number of people we have living here. You can't power this planet on that pipe dream. And then when weather gets really bad, the windmills don't work. They freeze up. In fact, right here where I live, we're facing a possible brownout again next week because we have some unusually cold weather coming into our area. Stuff that we're not prepared for. So this guy, Bjorn Lomborg, kind of straddles that line. Not so much between left and right, but between dreaming and practical thinking. So here he is with David Asman of the Fox Business Channel talking about EVs.
I want you to know earlier we had on Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. We asked him about the decrease in electric vehicle sales this year. It's just customers don't want them. Here's what he had to say about that. Roll tape.
There's going to be year-to-year fluctuations, right? A year ago, they couldn't stock them fast enough. Now we're seeing more of those ups and downs in demand. I don't know a lot of people who think that Americans in 2050 are still going to be driving that old technology, that combustion technology that we inherited from the 20th century.
But Bjorn, we have car companies who are losing money hand over foot in their EV divisions. We have consumers who aren't that crazy about buying, particularly as gas prices begin to come down a bit. Why do you think there's been a decrease in sales?
Well, fundamentally, because consumers don't want them all that much. Look, electric cars are good for some things, but they're not good for a lot of things. If you want to go far, if you want to be able to recharge really fastly, that's what you can do at a gas station. And for the transportation secretary, not knowing a lot of people who think that there'll be a lot of gas cars around in 2050, he should perhaps just look at the Biden administration's own Energy Information Administration that actually predicts that only about 20% of all new cars in 2050 are going to be electric. Unless, of course, politicians go in and demand it otherwise. But that's basically saying we're going to demand people not buying the car they would rather have had.
And, of course, it's all about energy, Bjorn. It's not just about oil, gas, electric. It's about where energy comes from. And if you have an electric car, you got to get a charge. And that electricity comes from something. It's just not pulled out of the air. And a lot of what it comes from is natural gas and oil right now. I mean, God knows there may be a time we have more nuclear energy or who knows what we'll find in the meantime. Maybe fusion will come to the fore. But right now we need oil and gas to get the energy.
Well, absolutely. Look, fundamentally, people believe that we can somehow magically transform into a world where we have no fossil fuels in a very short time. But this is going to be fantastically costly. So two new studies, peer-reviewed studies, show the first time what is the cost of actually going net zero by 2050. That's going to be $27 trillion each and every year throughout the 21st century. Compare this to a benefit of about $4.5 trillion. That's a vast loss. It's a loss of about $1,800 trillion over this century. That's just almost unfathomable. And of course, what that means is most people are just not going to vote for those governments who try to do this. Yes, Elon Musk is right. Eventually, we need to transition, but we'll only transition once it's cheap and effective. We need to make much more investment in green energy innovation so that eventually it'll become cheaper, so that everyone, not just rich, well-meaning Americans, but also Chinese, Indians, and Africans will buy this.
Well, and the bottom line is, Bjorn, that it's the poorest people who suffer the most when they don't have access to fossil fuels. They're the ones who are trying to climb out of poverty into at least the lower middle class. They can't do it on alternate forms of energy right now.
Absolutely right. Again, in much of Africa, they want to develop. They want to do what we did. Now, it's easy enough if you're rich and well off to say, well, I'm going to buy a Tesla and feel very virtuous and green, although, of course, you're not actually reducing your emissions all that much. But for most poor people, it's all about affordability. And again, remember, what really drives the world is affordable and reliable energy. Much of that comes from fossil fuels right now. That will probably still be true in two or three decades from now. But surely we should be investing in innovation, but we shouldn't try to force everyone on green energy, which will essentially make all of us poor.
And it also drives the American dream, what Americans care about. Take a look at this Fox News op-ed by Lisa McClain. She says the left has started an all-out war on American energy and claims that energy independence has been the driving force behind the American dream. Bjorn, some of the standards, the impossible standards that this administration has laid out for switching to EVs and other forms of alternative energy, they could be killing the American dream right here.
Well, they're certainly hurting it. I don't know if you can kill the American dream. That, I think, is better answered by Americans. But fundamentally, this is going to hamper a lot of people's ability to have those opportunities that cheap and available and reliable energy gives you. So again, let's remember the Biden administration's own estimate in 2032 is that about 14% of all cars, new cars sold, will be electric. They want to force it to be 67%. Yes. That's essentially telling about 50% of all consumers, you have to buy another vehicle than the one that you would have liked. That is a severe restriction of your abilities to be happy and do what you want.
And the American dream is about choice. And if we don't have choice, then we don't have the American dream. I would put it that simply. Exactly. Bjorn, good to see you. Thank you very much.
So basically, from a practical standpoint, how does this affect you and me? It comes down to who you vote for, really. I mean, because prior to the election of Joe Biden, we were on a pretty good track energy-wise. We had plenty of energy. You had plenty of gas at gas stations. And the price of fuel, not just for gasoline to power your cars, but fuel to heat your homes. Your utility bills were down a little bit because the price to fire up our power plants was lower under Donald Trump. Because Trump understands this sort of thing. Trump understands the reality behind our needs for energy as a society, as a civilization. And obviously, Bjorn Lomborg is pretty pragmatic about this stuff. I haven't read any of his books, but would like to find out more about this fellow because just what I derived from that conversation that he had here with David Asman from the Fox Business Channel, this is a practical thinking man. Cullen Linebarger, writing in the Gateway Pundit, says that radical left judge Arthur Engoron arbitrarily decided Wednesday, and there's a key word there, arbitrarily, decided Wednesday to deny President Trump the opportunity to give a closing argument during his civil fraud trial in New York City. Now, my understanding is that according to the law, he can do this. But it's not advisable. Because afterward, you can have challenges to that decision from another court and have the trial thrown out. Maybe this is a good thing. I don't know. But this is the latest example of how he's rigged this entire trial against Trump. He even refused a minutia of compassion following the death of Trump's mother-in-law, who died Tuesday. Yeah. And as Christina Layla wrote for also Gateway Pundit, she reported the tyrannical new New York Attorney General Letitia James is seeking $250 million in damages when there's no victim in this fraud case. She also wants to ban Trump and his sons from operating any businesses in New York. I mean, these people have lost their freaking minds. It's very obvious there. But very much left-wing NBC News noted that Trump had previously planned to deliver part of the closing statement himself in the trial, which is his constitutional right. But Engoron responded by listing a series of vague restrictions that made it impossible for Trump's lawyers to agree to. Then CBS, also leftist, reported Engoron stated that Trump would have had to limit his statement in court to what's permissible in a counsel's closing argument, that is, commentary on the relevant material facts that are in evidence, an application of the relevant law to those facts. So, of course, Engoron's taken every possible action to prevent the truth from emerging. Because really, if the truth were to emerge, and it will, it's only a question of how long before we hear the truth. But when the truth emerges, there are going to be a lot of people, including, let me change that, especially Judge Engoron. His career could be destroyed by this. So Christina Layla previously mentioned that Engoron gagged President Trump's lawyers, fined Trump twice for violating bogus gag orders, and denied his bid for a mistrial in New York. Engoron even yelled at Trump's attorneys while they defended him and threatened to jail Trump for leaving up the posts on his Truth Social page. You know, just, yeah. This is just a complete trashing of the Constitution, really. Engeren's despicable bias has been so blatant that moderate Congresswoman Elise Stefanik filed a judicial ethics complaint against him. Thank goodness. I like her, Stefanik. She's good. Don't mess with that lady. A New York appellate judge also paused his order to dissolve the Trump Organization back in October. I mean, you know, you try to do that and you have just opened the gates to hell, really. What is this guy Engeren thinking? The guy's a showboat. So given these facts, the judge knew Trump's attorneys would never agree and proceeded to censor Trump one more time using Orwellian language. Now, Trump attorney Chris Keyes wrote in an email to Engeren saying that Trump has been wrongfully demeaned and belittled by an out-of-control, politically motivated attorney general, and he should be allowed to speak about the things that must be spoken about. And then Keyes requested to postpone closing arguments of the 45th president's mother-in-law, whom he was close to. Apparently she liked Donald. And as Fox News reported, Engeren responded to this reasonable request with an insincere, sorry to hear the sad news, and then denied it. I mean, what a dirtbag, scum-sucking pus bucket he is. And here's what Engeren wrote. Let me read this note to you. He says, not having heard from you by the third extended deadline, noon today, I assume that Mr. Trump will not agree to the reasonable, lawful limits I've imposed as a precondition to giving a closing statement above and beyond those given by his attorneys, and that therefore he will not be speaking in court tomorrow. This guy Engeren, I want you to remember this guy's name. Should I spell it for you? E-N-G-O-R-O-N. The last four letters of his name are the same as the last four letters in the word moron. Just thought I'd put that out there. During yesterday's exciting podcast, or blogcast, as I prefer to call it, I mentioned the fact that Dr. Fauci was being grilled by a congressional committee. And this is a select subcommittee on the coronavirus pandemic. And they got some key takeaways from Fauci's first day of closed-door testimony on Wednesday, alleging the seven-hour hearing with the former head of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, I refer to it as NIAID, well, they uncovered drastic and systemic failures in America's public health systems. Dr. Fauci profusely defended his previous testimony where he said that NIH doesn't fund gain-of-function research in Wuhan. But Wednesday, he repeatedly played semantics with the definition of gain-of-function in an attempt to avoid conceding that the National Institutes of Health funded this dangerous research. See, basically what gain-of-function is, they take this little bacteria, they take these cells, and they play with them, and they try to make new bacteria out of it. See if they can evolve new bacteria out of it. And then, voila, at the end of the day, at the end of a day's playing in the lab, they've created something truly new and terrifying. And that's what happened with COVID-19. A 2020 email previously released by the select subcommittee proved Fauci was indeed aware of dangerous gain-of-function research occurring in Wuhan, China. But Wednesday, he backtracked by just arguing that he should not have stated that as fact. So clearly, the American people in the United States government are operating with completely different expectations about the responsibilities of our public health leaders and the accountability of our public health agencies. So, I don't know. This is kind of creepy when you consider how evasive and how self-serving Fauci can be. And I mean, he's clearly displayed a tremendous ego. So, while leading the nation's COVID-19 response and influencing public narratives, at the same time, he had no idea what was happening under his own jurisdiction at NIAID. That's from a statement after the interview from Chairman Brad Wenstrup, who's a Republican out of Ohio. He said Dr. Fauci signed off on all domestic and foreign research grants without reviewing the proposals and admitted that he was unaware if NIAID conducted oversight of the laboratories they fund. Doesn't that make you a little uneasy? It certainly should. Clearly, the American people and the United States government are operating with completely different expectations about the responsibilities of our public health leaders and the accountability of our public health agencies. Winthrop was also concerned by Fauci's inability to actually remember key details about the pandemic's origins and policies from that period of time. Now, either he didn't remember or he was saying he couldn't remember. Because Fauci wouldn't be on the hot seat right now if it weren't for some ethically tenuous aspects to his conduct during this time period. And Winthrop also made a point of reiterating during the session, nearly 1.2 million Americans lost their lives to a potentially preventable pandemic. And of course, meanwhile, Democrats disputed the GOP's takeaways, which of course they will always do. So, I don't know. This is a highly partisan thing. The Democrats are trying to save Dr. Fauci, and I think the reason they're doing this is because they're trying to save him for future lockdowns. Remember, this is an election year. Have you noticed certain things, like the rate of inflation has slowed? Have you noticed that the price of gasoline's gone down just a little bit, but it has gone down? It's election year, my friend. This is going to be a year of a lot of manipulation, mostly manipulation of you. The politicians are at it again to see just how gullible you can be prior to heading to the polls in November. I wouldn't trust this year. Not a bit. Before we ride off into the weekend, let's visit the Comedy Corner with Mike Burton.
My wife helps me on stuff that I don't want help on at all. Right? Like, I don't like winter. Like, I don't like winter. Like, I hate winter. Like, I'm originally from North Carolina. And, like, look, right now, you guys are having beautiful weather. And thank you for doing that, okay? I love it. Like, I hate winter so much, I'm for global warming. I am voting for it, marching for it. I might start buying people SUVs. I don't care. Ladies, start using hairspray again. No ozone. That's our goal. You know what's nice? 70 degrees in February. That's not. Ah. And see, there's people with me, but there's always a couple of crunchy granolas sitting around. The crunchy granolas sitting there thinking, but the polar ice caps are going to melt and we're all going to flood. No, we're not. We're not all going to flood. We're only losing Rhode Island, Long Island, and Jersey. Bye-bye. Here's a canoe. Get to safety. But anyway, I don't like winter. Like, it's a risk. Like, look, I fly out here. Like, I've driven places, like, during the winter. And it's a risk. Like, you don't know what they do. Like, I don't know, like, snowplow and all that kind of stuff. I was traveling one time, and I was, like, there was a snowstorm, right? I had to go from one town to the other town on the same night, and there's a snowstorm, right? On a normal, regular day, it takes, like, 45 minutes, okay? But now I'm in this snowstorm, all right? And it's up in the mountains, okay? Like, it's, you know mountain people? You know mountain people? Like, I stopped for gas. The guy's like, you want to fill it up? And, like, back it up. Earl. You're scaring me, okay? He was that kind of big guy. Like, you know mountain guys when they get so big, they can't walk normal. Like, they have to walk with their hands out front, which is just a weird look. Like, don't you walk with your hand, like, side, right? Like, you don't march, but you... Like, you walk, right? That's just a look that says, I got bodies in the basement, I like biscuits! So I have to get from one town to the other town, okay? Normal, regular day, 45 minutes. But now there's a snowstorm. I'm on this interstate in the middle of nowhere, okay? And I'm in a line of traffic, all right? It's 10 cars. We're all behind a tractor trailer because it makes tracks in the snow. Because everything's white. It's all white. Road's white. Dirt's white. You just drive off the road. You're going till April. See ya, okay? So we're all going 2 miles an hour so you don't die, okay? And you drive. And then on the side of the road, they had a big flashing yellow sign. Caution, caution, really? Thank you. So I keep going, and then there's a big flashing yellow sign up further. Caution, beware of squalls. Squalls. What's a squall? I'm in the middle of nowhere. I could die at any minute. But now I gotta be on the lookout for some lost Indian woman with an Amber Alert?
Make it a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?